Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Webcology. Webcology is the show that takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Our guides will take you on a journey into web marketing and bring you the experts and the information so that you can further explore the web marketing world. Now, here are the hosts of Webcology, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome to Webcology on WMR.fm. It's the 10th of March, 2022. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Dave Davies from Weights and Biases. I think I got that right this time.
You did. Well done.
Right on. It's March the 10th, 2022. And it's a beautiful sunny day, the beginning of spring. Daylight Standard Time comes into effect on Sunday in North America. So please remember to set your clocks forward an hour. And we are entering the third week of the illegal invasion and occupation of Ukraine by Russia. And we have sad news to report from Ukraine. A member of the SEO community, Tatiana Parabenis, died on live TV on Sunday while trying to leave Ukraine with her two children. Tatiana was in the city of Irpin. She was caught under heavy Russian shelling. She remained behind in Kyiv to try to help distribute emergency funds from her employer, SE Ranking. She was their lead accountant. SE Ranking was providing for Ukrainian employees. They can't work right now, but they were getting a payout so that they could at least have some money to live off of. She remained behind to distribute those funds, and again to try to help evacuate staff members and members of her family. And the last moments of her life were captured on camera by a New York Times reporter and shown live on CNN. It was a truly bizarre thing. I saw the incident as it happened. Didn't realize what I was seeing. A statement from SE Ranking on the murder of Tatiana and her two children. We are devastated to say that yesterday our dear colleague and friend Tatiana Parabenis, chief accountant of SE Ranking, was killed together with her two kids by Russian mortar artillery. The family was trying to evacuate from Irpin, a small city near Kyiv, that has been left without water supply, electricity, and heating. There are no words to describe our grief or mend our pain. But for us, it is crucial not to let Tanya and her kids, Elise and Nikita, remain just statistics. Her family became the victim of the unprovoked fire on civilians, which under any law is a crime against humanity. The Russian army are criminals, and they should be stopped. Our hearts are broken. Our prayers are for all Ukrainians who are fighting for their right to exist. And again, that was a statement from the company SE Ranking. Yeah, if you've been watching CNN or CBC or any of the news services, you very likely saw the tape, saw the snippet of video and didn't even realize it, but it's forever going to be marked as a moment of history in this conflict. And I believe, as far as I know, she is the first member of the SEO community to die in the conflict.
Yeah, that about covers it. There's nothing that I can add. I was like you, and I bet a lot of some of our listeners might not have even known what they were seeing. And it was first time. You know, obviously you see something like that, and it's horrible. But then when you're, additionally, sort of smacked with the fact that this is actually like somebody I know, that's right. It shouldn't necessarily mean more, but it does. When you're like, this is like a company I know, people I know, you know, it hits home harder.
Yeah. Well, again, to the shock of realizing that you saw the death of somebody you were tangentially connected to on live TV and didn't even realize it. I think for a lot of people in the tech industry, especially over here in North America, understanding what's happening in Europe is very difficult. We have friends in Ukraine. We have friends in Russia. We've all grown up on an internet that hasn't really known boundaries or borders, and until recently hasn't even been badly infected by politics. I'd say it was just the last 5 or 6 years that the internet has fallen into the cesspool of politics that it's become. And for SEOs, it's just a reminder of how small and fragile our world is, even though we work the internet, which seems unlimited, eh?
Yeah.
I'd like to assure listeners, I've been in contact with previous guests we've had on from Ukraine in the last couple of weeks. Olga, Igor, and Anton are all still alive. I was just chatting with Anton on Facebook a few minutes ago, a few minutes before this tape was recorded. So, again, to assure listeners, the guests you've heard on our show are still okay. And carrying on. There's not a lot. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not even sure what more there is to say on what's happening in Ukraine. Russia's been pretty much cut off of the internet. How this all gets rebuilt later, I have no idea.
Yeah, I know. We're all sort of in the same boat there.
Do you ever get the weird feeling that all the stuff you do just feels unreal? Like right about now? How do you cope with that?
I don't know. I saw a great, it was a meme, and I don't like to take, you know, my inspirations from memes, but there we go. And it was just like, yeah, that pretty much hits home, and it had just been shared with, like, I am really, really tired of being part of a point in history that's going to be interesting to learn about next century. Like, I don't want to be part of that. It is just a very, very, just, I mean, and I feel like, you know, crappy sort of complaining about, because my part in this is all very light, right? Like, my part of the world is not experiencing, the big complaint where I am is that gas prices are a little more expensive, right? Like, that's the big problem that we have. So I can't really, you know, feel like complaining, but watching it from abroad is horrifying.
A reminder to listeners, you can help out. There are dozens of relief charities, but probably the best way to help out is to contact the local Ukrainian consulate, either in the city you live in or the nearest large city to you, and they'll be happy to tell you ways that you can help. Okay, moving forward. It's been a we are a tech show after all. We got to pay a lot of attention to tech. Before we do though, shifting gears to a happier note. Congratulations, you and your wife Mary celebrated your 20th wedding anniversary last week.
Yes, we did, and I don't know how I convinced her that I'm the best she could do for this long, but you know, here we are.
You must have said something, because like, she's believed for 20 years now.
yeah, exactly. I just never let her meet anybody else. I guess that's the only explanation that makes sense.
Well, you guys are an amazing couple. You are, like, literally, as far as a couple goes, you guys are an amazing couple. Congratulations to both of you.
Thank you so much, Jim.
And congratulations to Mary for putting up with you.
Yeah, I know. I know.
And congratulations to the cat for putting up with Mary.
Yeah, that's probably true as well. Actually, that is very true.
I saw a neat post on Facebook, and it was actually put up by our friend Nava Hopkins. She just put up earlier today, and she was wondering what's going to happen with people if people have the energy to go back on the conference circuit again, go back on the tour. And it was weird seeing responses from people who are like conference regulars. You know, you will see these people on stage and have drinks with them afterwards, saying, "Yeah, I'm exhausted. I just really don't feel like doing this right now." What do you think, Dave? Things are opening up again. It feels like we're at the end of the pandemic, or at least at the part where we learn to live with it. Are you going back on the road?
I'm actually looking forward to it. Like, I'll be a little more, probably not to the same volume than I was. Like, I remember in the year, right, in 2019, sort of the last year, there was actually a sort of set of them in the fall that year where we didn't even bother going home. There were three conferences, and it just wasn't even worth coming back home between them. So that I might be a little more, you know, not picky isn't the right word, but just like good for myself and my own soul in life. But I am really looking forward to seeing everybody again. And yeah, as sort of like stressful as it can be, like that moment when you're about to take the stage and you're like, you know, there is that stress, right? Like just this, like we all like have a bit of stage fright or something built in there. I still miss it. Like that, like, and being up there and talking to people, you know, I still miss it. And that is a part that is missing it. There is no virtual conference environment that will ever touch that. I'm a few feet away. I'm wandering on a stage and chatting with people, and I can see their reactions. And, you know, I can talk to them and talk to them after, and seeing all of the conversations. And you know, I know whether you're like an attendee there to learn stuff or whether you're like a speaker, you get something as soon as it closes and you're going to dinner and then inevitably for some drinks after, that's actually some of the highest value is had there. And that just can't be replicated. I've never seen a virtual environment. Some of them try. I've never seen that properly replicated, where you can sort of like get that one-on-one sort of casual spontaneous conversations.
Well, and the cool thing about that is even the newest attendee is almost always welcome when the circle forms up at the bar and people are trying to figure out where they're going to have supper. And this is a tip, actually. If you're new to the industry and you're attending a conference and you get a whole bunch of people gathered around in a circle, a bunch of SEOs gathered around in a circle trying to figure out where they're going to have supper, they're not going to figure it out. They're just not. It's the tyranny of choice, and they're all stuck staring like deer at the headlights, all looking at their phones, trying to figure out where. If you have the right suggestion, you will be the most respected person in that group. And they will love you, and they will buy you a drink, and they will tell you everything.
True. And sometimes it just takes that one guy going, "I'm going here," and then just walking.
Stop going. But you better be sure, because if they don't follow, you got to keep on going.
Right, that's it. You're committed.
There is that point where you're terrified walking on stage. And a couple seconds in, you found your rhythm, and you just get that feeling in your stomach, you know, where you know it's going to be okay. And you can see the audience responding, and you can raise them with your voice, with your inflections and stuff. That's an amazing feeling. I really miss that.
It is. And I mean, you know, since we're talking about conference stuff, tip for those who might just be like, there'll be people, it's been a couple years, that are just entering that same circuit now for the first time. Like, there's 2 years of people who will want to, who haven't yet. So heck, there's going to be a lot more competition and people buying for spots. Now, a tip that I found is super helpful. I don't know how it'll play out for everybody, but the things that I found when I'm speaking, and results may vary, but is as soon as I'm starting to connect, then I do fine, right? Like as soon as I start talking and I see that it's not a total train wreck, I'm immediately doing a little better and I'm starting to engage. So I did find it incredibly helpful before I started. I'd show up a few minutes before and start talking to people in the audience, and it gives you a person to look at, if nothing else. Like, you know, you need to look around still, but just like you can start talking to people. you know, and it just becomes a little bit easier because you've sort of already broken that ice of engaging with the audience because you've already engaged with a few of them. So just that. Okay.
And older SEOs, just a reminder, as we do get back on the circuit and things start to open up again, remember how you got pulled up by people who'd been there a little bit before you. Mm-hmm. It's your turn to help pull other people up. That's the way things get done. The friendships and the networking at conferences, that's the spine and central nervous system. That the brain, the brain trust, the knowledge bank of SEO is built on. And pulling people up is the way we traditionally built on that. And so it's incumbent on the older members of the community to pull up younger members.
Very important. And a nice reminder.
Yeah. Okay. So speaking of conferences, Google's Unconference is coming up at the end of the month. And if you want to register for it, you can do it on March 17th over at rsvp.withgoogle.com. Go over there, click on events, search Central Virtual Unconference 2022. Register as soon as possible. I don't know how much room they have. You think it's Google and they got YouTube, so it should be unlimited, but it probably ain't. But get in there early. And get to this conference. It's so worth your time.
I know. You know what? I got the, or I saw probably on Twitter. Yes, it was from SEL. The announcement that was happening, and I popped over. I'm like, oh, okay, because I remember last year I waited like 2 hours and nope, didn't get a spot at the table. So I'm like, okay, I'll just like set myself an alert for whenever that is, 4 a.m. Pacific. I'm like, I have to get up. Like 3:55, get over to my laptop, hit refresh, log in, just to go back to bed, get a couple more hours of sleep. But I will. It's going to be that kind of event. So
yeah,
it will be worth it. And I'm sad I missed last year's.
Well, that's for those of us keeping score at home. That's 1 week from today. Yeah. So register for that. Get to that conference. There's a lot of neat stuff coming up. And when you're there, you'll hear the great Martin Splitt speak. Keep in mind that SEO 101 got an exclusive interview with Martin Splitt, and we are going to be giving Ross Noogie's first chance we get for that. Did you hear that? Yeah. They got an interview with Martin. Like, how, besides asking, how do you do that?
You know what? Knowing Martin, like I've only chatted with him at conferences. Looking forward to seeing him again. It probably was as simple as just asking. Just and ask. If he had the time, he would give it because he's that kind of guy, right? Like he wants you to know what he knows, which is really. I mean, that's why he does such a good job at doing what he does.
Clearly, completely unafraid of the Google PR department.
You know what? I suspect they got held. We've talked about it on the show before, but about how, for the most part, they actually don't tell people like John how the algorithm works anymore. Like that, it's been years since they actually had that level of information, and I think their PR department has a much easier time now. Like the PR and legal departments, now they can just sort of like keep them just understanding all the stuff they can talk about, but at a really high level, and why they should know it. You know, I think it's a lot easier than like, oops, we accidentally just gave away a signal like that's like was a hidden one or something like that.
Now here's the funny thing. Google doesn't even have to give the algorithm to John or to Martin or to anybody for John or Martin or anybody to be, you know, useful to webmasters and Google critics. You must have seen the other day where John just like I've. This was about as close as I've ever seen to him yelling at somebody online, but he was politely and very firmly saying, "Yo, dude, you have no clue." Did you catch that?
I there's two different instances that I was reading about this morning that you could be referring to.
I know, poor guy, huh? Look what he has to put up with. Okay, no, this
is the red
flag event.
Oh, okay. That is a different one. All right. So apparently there were three. Which one?
There's three. Okay. Well, you got one that I don't know of. So I'm gonna tell you the one that I know of, and leave it wide open for you to jump in with the next example. But okay, so here's stuff that John Mueller has to put up with. Some webmaster is just talking, you know, just trash talking Google about, you know, how his content's good and how his site structure is good and how there's, you know, zero he has to do to improve on his website. And how he's gotten all the right links from all the right places. And he starts listing off all the right places. And, you know, they're not bad places to get links from, but they're, you know, also places he's clearly gone to suss out links from. And just the big deal he makes about how Google is being so terribly unfair to him, how he's like done all of these things that he was supposed to do and went out and got all these specific links. And Mueller's just looking, ticking off, going, you know what, this is a red flag, this is a red flag, this is a red flag, and gives a polite but firm response saying something like, look, I don't got time to look into anything right now. I'm certainly not looking into your website, but you've given me so many red flags, I can almost certainly see why the search engine's not taking to your website. Hint to webmasters, don't complain to John Mueller and then brag about link acquisition. You're not going to get very far.
Yeah, that's probably a good rule of thumb. Since John constantly says, don't focus on links, and acquiring links, okay, like we can talk about how we talk about it as SEOs, but when you're talking to John says you shouldn't build links. So yeah.
What did you see?
Okay. There was another piece. This one just came out this morning. Perfect. Barry Schwartz, Search Engine Roundtable. Good, got that out of the way. Where somebody was trying to, basically the same sort of scenario, different cause, but same sort of scenario, like basically, why am I not ranking? I have this great site with a bunch of high value pages. And John responding back, just like basically, what are on these 26,000 pages.
Oh my God.
That's unique and compelling. Anyway, it was just stock prices, right? Like dynamically generated pull in. You've seen it. I've seen it. Why would it rank over something like Yahoo Finance that's been doing kind of that, but with more content on it for years? It was basically like 90% of the pages were just spun up table data, boilerplate sort of content. And John rightfully is just like, but you know, why? Right? Like, why would I rank that?
You know, a neat thing with that kind of content, this is one of the few times you can actually sort of spam Google, because Google wants static stuff on your page. Like, it wants a static title and H1 and all that sort of stuff to glom onto, because it's, you know, there's a time between Google rendering your page over and over and over again, right? But in the real world, this is stock stuff, so it's changing instantly. So you can actually basically cloak the web page itself, and Google will understand why you're doing it, because the information you're feeding changes frequently, but you've got to give some set of static information to Google. So if you can't rank that page, brother, what's the matter with you?
Well, he then came back and was like, okay, but what if I like have a, I'll just list it off, like an optimized XML sitemap and internal linking via blog and backlinking with blogger outreach. Will that help? And John's response just simply, none of this makes your website better. Like, all right. Yeah, there we are. It's not to dig at the person asking. I have to remember that there was once a time I probably still do ask stupid questions. I just don't know that they're stupid, and I have the confidence to ask a stupid question with confidence. And that, you know, might be the case here. But I'm so often catching myself feeling so sorry for John. I don't know if things are just surfacing lately that it's like, oh, I'm getting to like, actually I can watch John be sad on Twitter. Like I can watch it happening. I can just watch the tears start welling in his eyes going, how many times do I have to say a thing before it gets picked up? Especially with these sort of fundamentals where you'd go, you should be able to look at your own site and go, all of this is automated. I've got a template. I'm pulling in automated content. That automated content is available elsewhere from reputable sites. You know, I list, like in this case, Yahoo Finance. It's like one of my favorite sites for stuff like that, because you get news around it too. Like, you get some actual context there. It's like probably the only thing left that makes me refer to Yahoo at all. But it's you know, to their credit, it's a great build. You know, that's what you're competing with. Why would you possibly think that some thin content would do it? So, you know, tip, and I try to be self-aware in that context as well. When I'm like building something, I'm like, is it better than what's out there? Because if I'm just trying to trick Google into thinking it answers the question the best that question could be answered, it's probably not going to hold up, even if it ranks short term. You know, is what was being built better than what already exists? No. So why? It doesn't have new information. It doesn't have a new context. It has nothing new. So it makes sense. So something that everybody should remember when we're building content is it better than what exists, and what added value is there? Because you're not just trying to do what they've done. You need to do better than they've done ahead, because other sites are already beating you with all the other signals that come in, stronger sites generally, right? All of that stuff.
Well, and
you need to show you can beat them.
Indeed. And if you're trying to compete in a space that has players that have longevity, that have been there for a very, very, very long time, are trusted and would be considered, I don't know, say authoritative, right. You better have, again, like Dave said, you better be supplying something better, because it's very hard to beat that. But at the same time, not all rankings last forever. There's always a chance.
That is true. You might rank for, and we've all done that too. I mean, sort of, I can't speak for everybody in the audience, but I think probably most of us, where you've done that and you've actually gotten a ranking too, like just out of like the blue.
It's like, you got to start somewhere. And you know what? Mm-hmm. You might even get rankings for crap ass keyword phrases or keyword combinations. Mm-hmm. You might get rankings for long tail stuff. You might get rankings for stuff that only eighth of your potential audience is actually searching for. But keep at it. Keep improving. If you really believe in your product, keep adding to it. Keep making it better. You will keep getting links from good places, and you will eventually. But you better be able to survive in the meantime.
Yeah, and that is the tough part. Can I survive long enough to survive?
Indeed. And okay, we should shift subjects. And I'm gonna try. This should be a good segue. Check this out. And if actually, you know, it's a crappy segue. I'm not even gonna try the segue. It's so crappy. Did you see the story? And I think it's Etsy Roundtable. So Barry covered this. Barry Schwartz on verify this fix. Okay, so you're at Search Console, and Google has told you that there's something crazy wrong with your website. You know that it's probably not really an issue, but Google's telling you it's an issue. You go and double.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Double check. Not an issue. I have no idea what you're talking about, Google. What happens if I just click verify? I've never done this myself, being the scared little chicken that I am. But somebody did, and apparently it worked. And so Barry goes into this, you know, this is a great article, well worth the read. Barry goes into this quick analysis of what might happen if you press this button without actually fixing the issue, and comes up to the conclusion that you probably should push the button. Have you ever done that? Just, you know, told Google you fixed it, but didn't actually?
I did. But it was a case, and it was sort of what they were talking about in that piece, where I looked and they had picked up a schema issue, and I'm like, nope, that's a warning, not an error. Right. And these are different things. And so I resubmitted and did get it cleared. But that was more a, on Google's side, and they might have actually picked up like a different issue where it wasn't actually an issue. Like they might have, like, in that specific case, I was having to fire Schema through Tag Manager. So there was also a case that something just sort of went wrong there, because it's not perfect, but it was just the only implementation we could do. So, you know, there's one of a few things that it could have been, but yeah, I just hit it and I'm like, you know, they'll tell me if it's not. Like, I wouldn't sit there and hammer on them all the time. But I didn't view there being a big problem. So, like, in a one-off here or there, I can't see it. Let's see if this clears it. If it doesn't, then I'll dig a little deeper into seeing. But there was nothing I could, like, see on first sort of blush and putting it through, you know, a couple tools just to check. And I'm like, no, it really is just a warning. And I can't get through the warning. I didn't have an image. That was the one they were giving me. I'm like, I don't have an image for that, and it's not necessary. So, so I went in and just did it. At least that was the only error that I could see from that. But as I say, it might have just been the firing way we did it. It might not have been sent across in time, and it might have been a different kind of error that was sort of like tripping it up. But anyway, yeah, I have done it. It does work. But I think to Barry's point, it's not something to just do. Like, give a peek first. I don't see a harm in just giving it a try. If you sort of on first blush can't see it, if it comes back, they'll tell you, but you wouldn't want to consistently do that. I view that sort of like, if you do ads, like occasionally you're going to get a warning on some are going to be denied for a thing. Don't keep hammering that same ad at them and trying to get like the word free software in there or something, like when it's not, or whatever. That was a failing one that I've had recently. You know, you don't want to do that. Because you will end up ticking somebody off, and even if it's just the system, you could get yourself into trouble.
Well, actually, I'm gonna like add to this. If you are you're not talking about like trying to validate a problem they found in a PPC campaign, are you?
I was likening. Now that's a different thing.
They got a three strikes rule.
Yes, they do, and that's I'm like, you don't sit there and just do that. Like, I have submitted it where I thought they were wrong, and they do give you that as a benefit, right? Like, I think you're wrong. It's not actually a problem, right? Like, it's not the problem you think that you are saying it is. After that, though, I'll like reach out to my rep, right? Like, go, okay, I need you to, exactly for that reason. Like, I'm not going to push it past that, past like a first try at going, okay, when a human puts their eyes on it, can they see that they're wrong? Right. And then let that come through. But past that, yeah, you don't just go like, oh, keep submitting it and let's see how this goes. even if you're right, it could be a very expensive right to be.
Oh my God. I have a client in the B2C world. I can't mention the exact industry they're in. But they carry products that have sensitive keywords. Put it that way. It's not sexual or adult stuff, but sensitive keywords. And some of these words are outright banned in PPC and AdWords. And they got hit with a three strikes PPC rule that actually bled over into the organic world. And their pages to this day, I just did a year over year in Search Console on them. And I can all but prove that they're being suppressed in the organic world, receiving fewer impressions, even though they're positioned higher this year than they were last year. It's maddening to me, and I'm positive it results from completely and blatantly violating the three strikes rule.
Right.
We're not responsible for their PPC campaign, I'll have you know.
let's be really clear on this.
But the people who are got an earful from me. Like, seriously, I was so angry. And again, I can't prove it because those two streams are not supposed to cross.
Right.
But I can all but prove it. It's maddening. Don't screw with it. It's the bottom line. What do we got going next?
Well, something, speaking of things you can't prove that just seem like you can prove them. It depends. Dan Scher had come out basically going, he had run a test. If you ask Google content hidden behind a click, like for mobile usability and things like that, right? Like hidden in tabs, like quote unquote hidden. It's not hidden, but it, you know, for page layout, might have it behind tabs or something. According to Google, that should not impact rankings. Having it having the content that is hidden should be weighted the same as content that is visible. It's not supposed to have an impact.
I always thought it depended how it was hidden.
Yeah, and that's Dan ran a test on that. And Google had said, like, there were some case studies that were done back in 2018. And they had said that, nope, those case studies are wrong, that nope, hidden content is totally fine, especially with the mobile first.
Well, because you need to. You need to use tabs to just present that much content on a mobile screen. For your
layout. Exactly. Okay. But Dan ran his test, and it is only one test, but looking at the way the results were sort of put, it's worth testing if you have content hidden under accordions and stuff like that. And went, no, the only change we made is we moved it out and our rankings went up. Like, the only change we did. And not just, they were high competition terms. He wouldn't give them, of course, but they were, Dan's not an idiot. So when he says high competition, I go, okay. Yeah, they probably were. And that was the only change he made. So definitely something worth testing if you do have content structured like that on a page is what happens if you pull it out. Because it certainly seemed to work in his case. I'm not saying Google's wrong. But I'm saying testing is always a good idea.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'd really like to see Dan's results, because I don't disbelieve him. In fact, I actually do believe him, but his findings annoy me. like I said incredulously a few minutes ago, you need to hide that. Not hide it, but you need to pack that content behind a tab if you want to present it two or three things on one mobile page, because even with my very big new Android phone with a screen that's larger than I could imagine on a mobile device, you still can't pack enough information there and make the view, and, you know, have the viewport large enough and the font size big enough. And again, Google comes straight out and said, we scan all the text on the page. But when you think about how Google does scan and check pages, when it's rendering, does it go into the tabs? Does it open the accordions? Is it capable of doing that in a render? I can see it in a spider, but in a render, can it do that?
Right, and seemingly the answer would be no, because it doesn't click. Right, so.
So what were they telling us last year, or 2 years ago?
What I suspect they were basing it on was that in viewing the code, they can understand what would happen. Like, they're not actually clicking it, but that they understand code well enough to go, okay, we can see this big list, right? It's rendering like this, but we can see the code that would be underneath that hamburger icon, right?
So down with that too. Totally, yeah. Down with that. And Google will return an error. Oh, not an error, I'm sorry. Will return an error message that reads, nothing has changed here. Was it like a 310? Isn't it a 310? If I don't miss my, no, is it a 310 or a 210?
No. See, now you want to go look. We'll look this up in a minute. But Google at the same time, like, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to say Google serves a message saying nothing has changed on this page. And that's cool. That's a great way to see that Google has sort of inspected a page and moved through it without assuming it's spent a lot of time on that page. But you know that it's rendered, seen, perceived, and moved on to the next page in its list, and returned a status code. I mean, I think it is a 310. Nothing changed. But again, I'm not positive on that. And so if it's done that, you assume it's read all the information that's available on the page, yeah?
Right. You assume so. But at the same time, he had posted, Dan had posted a picture of one of the pages. Like, obviously, he can't give away too much, but guess what? Here's one of the pages. It's a high competition. And it's showing, like, sort of having to, like, guess, but it does have the, like, click volume. It's pulled right out of Search Console. And before he made the change, this page, for example, was in the range of, looks like, about 80 to 90 a day. After the change, it does fluctuate more wildly. You can see the weekends a little more dominantly, but at the very least, it's doubled, tripled on a lot of days.
That's phenomenal.
So yeah, it's a significant increase. But it obviously requires more testing. And I think everybody's site is different. It may have been that the development of his site, the way the content was hidden, to I think the point you were sort of getting at, was in a way that Google couldn't quite understand. And now it's just not a problem. So it might have been the technology behind the way they had implemented their sort of quote unquote hidden content or tab system, as opposed to it actually being a tab system, like anecdotal data, one anecdote does not like a conclusion make, but it did draw my attention. And it's interesting because I've been talking about this type of content quite a bit lately, like just in questions and in forums and stuff. It is sort of one of those things that it comes up a lot, and this was really nice timing. And now I sort of want to start testing some stuff and see what we can do, or I'll just watch other people and let them test it.
Indeed. Well, this is of interest and concern to webmasters. Especially if you have an e-com store or a store where consumers are looking for things. Google is heavy in the mobile world, especially around local consumer stuff. I'm not sure how heavy Google is in the mobile world around B2B stuff. And again, I've only got my own clients and that I can cite. So this is anecdotal. And it's only my observation. I have no other SEOs confirming this. But my B2B clients who are doing really well on their desktop UX scores are performing wildly in search right now. It's like it's Christmas time in March for me. And there was a recent update that Google said had something to do with desktop user experience. I guess they they're spent a year, 2 years on mobile user experience, and their data said a lot of people, and especially in the B2B world, relate to the web via desktop. Anyway, Dave, have you noticed that? Have you noticed that B2B in desktop is doing amazingly well? I can't say the same about mobile, but desktop is there was a change.
Yeah, I won't speak to B2B, but I like just because of the way I have a limited sort of pool of data there. But I can say desktop heavy websites are like where more of their traffic is from desktop than mobile. And it makes perfect sense, right? Those ones are being rewarded right now. I'll pull a googly thing. I guess it's not really rewarded. it just kind of feels like a reward, to your point, because they're being treated the way they should be treated, which is desktop traffic is what I'm gathering is sort of going on. Desktop traffic being put under the desktop traffic sort of criteria and filters. Or I'm calling a filter like speed, you know, going through and adjusting for speed. Treating desktop on that, like if 90% of my traffic is coming from desktop, all of my desktop users should be judged on that criteria, not how it did on mobile, right? Or even if it was 10% of the traffic was coming in from desktop, desktop should be treated by the speed metrics of desktop, not of mobile. And I think this is just a case where we're finally seeing that sort of playing out, and where each one is different. And I suspect, like if I was Google, I'm not saying this is how it's done, I'm just saying if I was Google, I'd put a little less weight on it on desktop than I would on mobile. Like on mobile, I'm fighting for bandwidth a lot more often than I am on desktop, where for the most part, we all have pretty solid connections, right? Like I don't need these like fractions of seconds in quite the same way that I do. So I think in a lot of cases, it wasn't even necessarily being rewarded, but rather not being held to the same standard as you would be on mobile, where it is a lot more important to have, fractions of seconds faster. You're just not going to see the same speed boost, because the same thing that would be fractions of seconds on a mobile device might be negligible on a desktop with the speeds we have there.
It's not just my imagination. That's a good thing to know. Because you don't want to say to your client, I'm definitely seeing this.
Yeah. But then at the same time, we're all doing so much stuff that it's like, or it could have been this other thing, right? Like, I was also doing these other things at the same time, right? We also, you know, I'm sure, like, you do a lot of content, right? Like, you probably also have been producing content and having them produce content during that time that might also factor in.
There's a definite and beautiful hockey stick-like uptick in in both Search Console and analytics. And this one client I'm specifically thinking of that has a absurd desktop versus mobile ratio. I saw this and thought this isn't normal. Like they have steady traffic. They keep me around because they like being steady. and they're performing so much better suddenly, which is good. Like being able to say this is why. So I'm gonna say Dave said, and then go from there. So Danny Sullivan made the news again. He this time for not telling off, but firmly correcting former presidential candidate Andrew Yang and UCLA professor Ramanish Srivastan. I've brutalized the last name. I apologize for that. Anyway, Andrew Yang and a UCLA professor were on Yang's podcast, quote unquote, Beyond the Valley, talking about how personalization has changed the way Google serves results to people. And in trying to describe how personalization works, the professor, Ramesh Srinivasan, completely misexplained personalization. The professor said something along the lines of, so when Google started doing this personalization stuff, what happened is we became Googled, and we became Googled not based on some sort of a... I can't even read this word salad. I'm sorry. The professor said word salad. Complete, absolute word salad. You can check it out at SE Roundtable, Barry Schwartz's website, where you will see Danny Sullivan jump in and saying, yeah, no. Our search results at Google are not personalized in the way that's described. And he goes on to describe how search does work and tries to dispel a number of myths around it. The really frustrating thing is seeing politicians and professors absolutely confidently, you know, the confidence of a four-year-old in a Batman costume.
That is confidence.
That's confidence, but making pronouncements on things they absolutely don't understand. It's frustrating.
Yeah, and these are the people that create the laws.
Yeah. I've been doing this for 25 years now, and I'm not positive I completely understand it, to be very honest.
Oh, no.
It's very complicated, you know.
That's fair. You know what? That gets into that Dunning-Kruger, right? Like, you have people with a very, very, very low level of knowledge, and they come in with the confidence of a four-year-old in the Batman costume. But once you've learned a whole bunch of stuff past that, all of a sudden your confidence starts to dwindle. Well, it's like, oh, wait, I know how much I don't know.
The only thing I'm ever confident saying in SEO is, it depends. And I credit Jesse McDonald with that line. I think we should, like, when the tales of SEO are finally told in the great archive in the sky, I hope Jesse gets credited with the phrase depends. mostly for when he was, you know, at CSV picking out diapers for Lady Joy.
Right? Yeah. Maybe we should push to get Joy's name changed, actually. Just, it depends. Okay. I don't think they would like that. That's fair. Okay, I think we have time for maybe two more stories. What do you think?
Something like that. Go for it.
Cool. One that I like, I got It's funny, it's not actually on their website, but I got an email. So I'll just be telling people to go, you can't look at this anywhere. But it does go back to a past piece of information, which is available to us. But over on Cloudflare, they have Always Online. It's a service. And it just delivers archived content when they can't reach your server. Right. Like if basically like they're caching your site. Right. So if it goes down, they still have a cache and they'll hold it. You can decide whether you want the service on or off. Great little service. They have been using the Internet Archive for a while. Now they're going to be hitting that up for basically everything. So basically they're going online. It's now entirely powered by the Internet Archive. So they're going to be shoving this stuff over to the archive, I gather. I don't know all the technical parts in the background. That wasn't covered in the email.
So Cloudflare and the Wayback Machine are in cahoots.
And the Wayback Machine.
Okay.
Exactly. So they're going to be pushing it in there and then drawing from the archive itself when your site goes down. What a great idea. I love this for two reasons. One, I love that Always Online, like it's just a great idea, like just having this like backup, and Cloudflare already has a cache. But something else that I also like, I don't know how often I've had my butt saved when like a client, and it's even happened to me where I've like deleted a page and had the client go, no, we needed that page. It was an obscure page, right? Like where it's like, I didn't see a thing, hasn't happened in years, but it had happened. And then you're like scrambling to the archives and the cache, and oftentimes it's not there. Just because, you know, the archive only crawls what it crawls. This is, I think, a nice way to kind of force an archive to be there.
Now, maybe you can help me out with this. When I first saw this story, the first thing that ran through my mind was, isn't this what a content delivery network does anyway? Makes vast copies of your website and stores them in cache on servers around the world so that they can feed the site to a nearby request faster than it could from a whole other continent away? Like, isn't that the purpose of a CDN in the first place?
Yeah, but what they're going to be doing in this case, it's sort of an interesting one, because Cloudflare generally goes to your server, creates its cache, and then does exactly as you're describing, right? Like starts distributing it based on the location. In this case, it's sort of that, instead of going to your server, I mean, they'll keep going to your server and going, is it back online yet? But if it's down, go, oh, let's check over at the archive, pulling that archive out and using it basically as the replacement for your server until it finds your server back online again. But either way, it then is acting as a distribution node. It's not sending people to the archive. It's just going, okay, here's the content, put it into the page, send it off. They won't get that like big header and stuff that you get from the Wayback Machine.
Well, in that case, if I'm sure you've noticed this at the Wayback Machine, it gets almost everything. But sometimes it skips over files, and I don't know why exactly. I never bothered studying and trying to figure out why the Wayback Machine gets like 95% of a website right, but misses some stuff. If you're on Cloudflare, and this might be happening, I think it would be very SEO of you to understand how how the Wayback Machine spiders and remembers stuff. Why it might or might not miss a file. Like it would behoove you to make sure that your site is set up for the Wayback Machine now.
Well, indeed, and I suspect, and again, I didn't read the technical details, but I suspect that is part of this agreement. It's probably jamming it in there. Right, like I imagine that that's just part of what it does in their agreement is, if you have this service turned on, it now will make sure that it's in the Wayback Machine. So
well, I wonder if that's like a long-term source of funding for archive.org. I really hope it is. That's a cool thing.
I hope so too. And I know we need to jet something. I'm just going to tell our listeners to go and head over to any of them that do paid search. Over on Search Engine Land just earlier today, Amy Hebden published a post, 5 things your Google Data Studio PPC dashboard must have. I read it. I'm normally not drawn to these kinds of articles, but I decided to pop over anyway. And I gave it a read. Some really great insights. I'll be taking a few of her ideas and moving them into dashboards. So So a really, really great read for anybody who uses Data Studio as a PPC reporting tool.
Excellent. Right on. Okay. We've done it. We've gone around full clock and it's top of the hour. I know there's another show coming up on the WMR network. So studio is going to be occupied. You got a 3 o'clock meeting that I understand. I got a 3 o'clock meeting I got to get to. So friends, you have been listening to Webcology on WMR.fm. It's the 10th of March, 2022. If you can, rent an Airbnb in Kyiv and don't show up. Buy a coffee for Anton to help with animal relief. Contact the Ukrainian embassy and find out how you can make donations. And if you have work and can hire a Ukrainian SEO, by all means, do so. They need food money for survival right now. Rank well. I should also give all the COVID stuff too. My God, was it you earlier saying that it's tough living in a historic time? Anyway, be kind to each other. Rank well. We'll be back on behalf of Dave Davies from Weights and Biases. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. We'll talk to you next week.
The opinions expressed in this WMR.fm program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMR.fm. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.